This is Radio MD COVID-19 Daily, your source for COVID-19 news from the front lines of healthcare. I'm Caitlin White. We're halfway through the week. It's Wednesday, May 6th. Coming up towards the end of our episode, we'll hear about how viruses spread through the eyes and how to reduce our exposure to harmful blue light now that we're spending even more time on screens while stuck at home. And our healthcare heroes today are the staff of Montefiore Nyack Hospital. A couple members tell us about what they've been seeing on the front lines of the pandemic. And now, our news. If you think about it too hard, it seems like everything is a threat during the COVID-19 pandemic. Sure, other people, crowds, and public door handles are big ones. But what about your keys, your phone, the things you carry on you at all times? Dr. Steven Berger is the co-founder of the Global Infectious Diseases and Epidemiology Network in Tel Aviv, Israel. And he told WebMD recently, you have no reason to compulsively avoid or even clean every object in your personal world, with one exception, your own hands. While a quick wipe of your phone or wallet isn't the worst idea, it's not necessary. Berger says the list of objects which could potentially be contaminated is endless, but that does not mean that everything you take outdoors needs a biohazard scrub down upon return. He went on to say wearing a mask and washing your hands is still the best line of defense. As China enters the early stages of reopening, a number of new protocols are going into effect. For example, the full-body sanitation pods at the Hong Kong airport. Radio MD Scott Webb tells us more about those.
It's likely that during COVID-19, many of us have wondered when a full-body sanitizing method would be available. Well, wonder no more, as full-body sanitization pods have been installed at Hong Kong International Airport. The clean tech pods check your temperature before entering, and once inside, users receive a 40-second disinfection and sanitizing procedure. The UV-based disinfection method kills viruses and bacteria on the body. Currently, only airport staff are using the pods. And as if that isn't sci-fi enough, intelligent sterilization robots outfitted with ultraviolet light and air sterilizers are being deployed to clean the restrooms and other high-traffic areas of the terminals. Reporting for Radio MD News, I'm Scott Webb.
While the coronavirus pandemic has led to a variety of restrictions in almost every aspect of daily life, for many with disabilities, the lockdown has actually opened up the world. With more on that story is Radio MD's Bill Klaproth.
While the coronavirus has basically shut down the world, it has opened it up for many with disabilities who for years have missed out due to poor access. As people with disabilities are suddenly finding themselves able to take part in work, culture, or socializing from their own home for the first time. As well as the joy of being offered new opportunities, many feel frustrated that it took the non-disabled world to become housebound before access was granted. However, Karen Turner, 42, who has a brain injury, says on a hopeful note, "I feel like people are finally understanding the physical barriers disabled people face, and I'm actually really optimistic good will come out of this." For Radio MD News, I'm Bill Klaproth.
Our healthcare heroes today are just outside of New York City. They are the staff of the Montefiore Nyack Hospital. Here are a few who shared their thoughts with us on what it's been like to be up close and personal with a pandemic.
Obviously, when this thing started, we didn't really know kind of what we were dealing with. So obviously, there was certainly a lot of worry, a lot of panic with the unknown. And so in the beginning, when we were still kind of learning about the disease, just the uncertainty and fear and anxiety was certainly a lot. But once we started to see some successes with treatment regimen, once we started to get a little bit more understanding about this illness, and I guess the collaboration between like the docs and the nurses, not only within our hospital, but with other hospitals too, and kind of just really uniting against this, that really has been something, I don't know, very, very positive. I remember, like, so I have a bunch of friends throughout the nation. You know, we all went to med school together, a residency, and even just moving out here to New York, just kind of collaborating with the docs that I've met, trying to figure out, you know, the different stages of this disease and coming up with a treatment regimen. But not only that, being able to kind of talk about all the ethical things that are popping up, all these different aspects of a whole new, you know, type of pandemic crisis that's happening. And I guess that kind of lets us all know that we're all in the same boat, kind of in the same foxhole together. And that we're gonna figure it out. So that was one of the one of the beginning comforting things. You know, obviously we saw a lot of death and horrible things that were breaking up families and things like that. But at the same time, once we started to get some victories, I think, you know, that hope was just huge. One of the things that our hospital actually did, you know, with each, I guess, victory or each discharge or was playing just music overhead. And initially we're like, oh, that's pretty cool. But then it actually became like a sign of, I noticed a lot of folks would actually become quite emotional when, you know, when we would start hearing like the songs overhead or, you know, because again, in the hospital, it's just so stressful. I do know, like, whenever, like, Alicia Keys' I think New York would pop up, that would definitely be a big a big pleaser just to get people going. But and actually for patients too, because sometimes when like Journey or Bon Jovi would come on, they would just start singing like Don't Stop Believing or something. And just those little victories would always help.
I find the positives is, I guess, in the response of the community in general. It's, I guess, the courage of the healthcare workers who really are, especially our nurses, as well as respiratory techs and everybody else, custodians, you know, janitors. They're all there. They're all going up and they all go in and do their thing. So that's where we're going to find the positives. I think that the one quote that I've been using several times already, one of our administrators used, is that we bent all the way back, but we did not break. And that's very well put. You know, there was a time where we were running out of capacity to do dialysis, which is life-saving, but we just couldn't. We never came to the point where we couldn't do it, but we came almost to the point where we couldn't do it. In other words, our nurses had to stay till 11 p.m. in order to be back at work the next morning, early in the morning, and they would do that day after day after day. And that was the problem, that we had enough equipment. We never ran out of equipment, but we definitely ran out of ability to do what we wanted because of the lack of manpower and specialized manpower at that. But that's just past now. I think it's better now.
So it's been a very challenging time for sure. And I think to find positive is sometimes difficult, but I believe that we do see it. And I think we see it in ways that we don't always think of. We see it in the way that everybody comes together to resolve issues and to help one another. You know, typical behavior you see during times of adverse situations where people pull together and people work together. There's a more congenial atmosphere sometimes than you would normally see in a workplace setting sometimes. So there is some positive among all the tragic moments that we see as well. Our department is environmental services. We're responsible for the cleanliness and overall safety of the facility. You know, some of the challenges we came across right away was what I guess I would describe as the wave. It came so fast and so sudden. Certainly had plenty of notice that this was about to occur, but I don't think anybody was prepared for the rapid ascension that we saw with the number of cases that were coming into the hospital. I think we learned a lot about how, you know, work around some of those challenges in these situations. And on top of that, of course, is the human toll, if you will, the ability for our staff to overcome the very difficult position they were put in, with their families not even wanting them to come to work because of a potential exposure. One gentleman in our department was actually moved out of his apartment into the basement of the building because his family wouldn't let him come into the home any longer. So he's been living in his basement for you know, 6 or 8 weeks now. We have another worker in our department who has a family member who is very compromised individual, and he's of course very concerned about bringing something home and further, you know, hurting somebody in his family. So it's very challenging from that perspective just to to know what they're going through on a personal basis, as well as what they're seeing here physically, dealing with all the emotions and the fear of what they're challenged with each and every day they come to work.
And we try to keep upbeat by keeping humor a part of it, you know, able to support each other in what we do. You know, one of the things that the hospital is doing is over the loudspeaker when we have patients that are either extubated or downgraded from critical care to one of the step downs, is they're playing Here Comes the Sun by the Beatles over the loudspeaker. And whenever it comes on, it's just, you know, it's immediately lifts your spirits. And, you know, we've all started kind of dancing when the song is over. So that it really is fun to be a part of that. We actually had a patient that was one of our initial, you know, quote, quote, patient zero. He was one of the first. He was intubated for over 3 weeks. And when he was extubated and we were able to send him over to the step down unit, you know, they played that song and we had his family on an iPad able to FaceTime him. So it was really a whole experience for him and for us to be a part of him successfully being extubated and going to step down. And then he's now in a rehab facility, getting stronger, getting ready to go home. Music is certainly a way to stay positive. I know another one, not really official of the hospital, but we had another patient who was extubated and he's primarily Spanish speaking. So one of our intensivists, Dr. Gupta, he found a Spanish rendition of Fight Song on his phone by Rachel Platten, and he played that on his phone. And then my colleague, who was this patient's primary nurse, she used her phone to FaceTime his daughter so that she could watch while, you know, he smiled and gave a thumbs up. And it was really a very beautiful thing to be a part of. Yeah, so it really is hard for the families to have their loved ones in the hospital and not able to see them, obviously not able to talk to them because they, you know, can't have a conversation. But by using technology to FaceTime, and it gives them that ability to sort of be there virtually.
In order, that was nephrologist Dr. Michael Trax, Director of Environmental Services Tom Attice, hospital physician Dr. Devitt Roy, and ICU nurse Sarah Eckhart, all from Montefiore Nyack Hospital. Thank you for what you're doing. Dr. Ronnie Bannock is an author and a board-certified ophthalmologist specializing in eye health, neurological conditions, and migraine headaches. She joins us today to talk about how viruses can spread through the eyes, prevention strategies we can take, and how to reduce our exposure to harmful blue light now that we're spending even more time on screens while stuck at home. So let's jump right into it. What are your top two concerns when it comes to eye health and COVID-19?
Yes, I know COVID-19 has raised a lot of health concerns, but specifically to eye health, first of all, the virus can potentially spread through our eyes. So that's my first concern. Even though it's considered to be very rare, the virus can enter the body through the mucous membranes of the eyes. So for example, if it's in the air, it can potentially get into the mucous membranes, or if we touch something that's contaminated and then touch our eyes, it can enter that way as well. Mm. And there's also been some research that shows that tears of people who are infected can carry virus particles. So if those people happen to rub their eyes, touch their eyes, and touch a surface, they can actually contaminate that surface, like, for example, a doorknob or a faucet. But my bigger concern with COVID and eye health is actually our increased use of digital devices. You know, many of us are now working from home. We're doing homeschooling. We're connecting with friends and family through virtual means, and we're also doing more entertainment. So our eyes are really getting exposed to screens a lot more, as well as blue light.
Tell us a bit more about that blue light. What is it and why is it so dangerous?
So blue light is a high energy short wavelength light. It comes from the sun mainly, but it also comes from our screen. So any kind of screen, for example, whether it's a phone, a tablet, a laptop, a television, all these devices emit blue light. And it actually also comes from certain bulbs. So, for example, energy-saving bulbs like LED bulbs or CFL compact fluorescent bulbs, all of these bulbs emit blue light. And what blue light can do is, in terms of health, it can cause some issues. So in the eyes, basically, fortunately, there's no evidence to show that it causes long-term damage or blindness. That's not been shown at all, but it can cause some short-term effects, for example, digital eye strain. And what digital eye strain is, it's a syndrome of blurry vision, difficulty focusing, light sensitivity, eye strain, and headaches. And so blue light definitely has been associated with that. It's also been shown to affect sleep. So blue light, when it comes from the sun, it helps to regulate our sleep-wake cycle or our circadian rhythm. And so when we get it from our devices, it can interfere with our normal sleep patterns. And so especially if we're working on our devices late into the night, it can make it more difficult to fall asleep or stay asleep. And then finally, in terms of blue light and health, there's been some early work done in children that shows that too much blue light exposure can lead to behavioral issues like hyperactivity or perhaps even cognitive issues. So there's, you know, there's a lot of, you know, concern about blue light because of all these multiple potential health effects.
So with such a dependence now on screens, you know, with working from home or kids going to school on iPads and all that stuff, how can we filter the blue light? How can we protect ourselves while being on these screens still?
You know, great question. I get this a lot from my patients. You know, many people think they should turn to blue blocking glasses or perhaps a filter that blocks out blue light, but there are two really wonderful ways to protect your eyes against this blue light. And they come from, so basically the two ways are nutrition and supplementation. So first, let's talk a little bit about nutrition. So nature has created these natural blue blockers within our eyes. They're actually pigments that are found in the retina in the back of the eye that help to filter out this blue light. And these pigments, there are three pigments. They're called lutein, zeaxanthin, and mesozeaxanthin. Now, I know that sounds like a mouthful. It's hard to remember those names. But these pigments are found in certain foods. And so, for example, green leafy vegetables like spinach, kale, collard greens are very high in lutein and zeaxanthin. Also, orange peppers, yellow peppers, corn, egg yolk, these foods are rich in zeaxanthin. Mesozeaxanthin, unfortunately, is not readily found in food, so it's a little bit harder to get it from foods. But these pigments, when we have them in our diet, they help protect our eyes because they absorb that blue light. Now, unfortunately, from diet alone, it's hard to get the recommended amount of all of these nutrients. So, for example, in adults, the recommended amount of lutein is about 6 milligrams a day, and most of us probably only get 1 or 2 milligrams. Most of us who have a Western diet are only getting that much. In terms of zeaxanthin, so the recommended amount is about 1 milligram a day. Most of us don't even get close to that. And again, mesozeaxanthin is not found in foods. And that's why I strongly believe that supplementation is so important, especially during, you know, especially during this time when we're so attached to our digital devices. You know, we're on our screens for hours a day, and especially our children, whose eyes may not naturally be able to filter out some of that blue light as well. They may be perhaps more at risk. So I usually do recommend a daily supplement. And a quick and simple thing you can do is you can look for an ingredient that actually has all three of these eye health pigments, lutein, zeaxanthin, mesozeaxanthin. And that pigment, that ingredient is called Lutamax 2020. And it's in many of the supplements out there. So it's found, and if you look on the label, you see that Lutamax 2020. It's been clinically studied. It's actually been shown in studies to decrease blue light issues in terms of digital eye strain, to help with sleep issues. You know, in this day and age, when we are, you know, again, a digital world, we really do need to be proactive to protect our eyes. So I take the supplement myself. I recommend it for my patients. And I would suggest doing it every day because of the screen time that we're exposed to.
How do you see eye health changing or, you know, adapting to a post-COVID-19 world?
So I think, you know, this trend towards more and more device use and dependence on our screens, this is a trend that's here to stay. Mm. It was already starting before COVID-19, but, yeah. You know, now with this pandemic, staying at home, working from home, it's really accelerated our dependence on our devices. So this is not going to change. So I think long term, this is the new normal. You know, many people will continue to work remotely on their screens. Mm-hmm. Maybe much of education may be remote as well. So I think it's just it's in our best interest to protect our eyes long term, to think about our diet, you know, using those nutrients from fruits and vegetables and eggs and corn, and also to consider supplementation on a daily basis long term.
Well, Dr. Banik, thank you so much for your time. This is an angle I haven't thought of at all during all of this. So thank you for, you know, bringing it to our attention.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me on your show.
That was Dr. Ronnie Banik, a board-certified ophthalmologist and author. Her new book is called The Macular Degeneration Prevention Protocol. And this has been Radio MD's COVID-19 Daily. Send a healthcare hero our way or share what you've been doing to keep busy at COVID19Daily@RadioMD.com. That's COVID19Daily@RadioMD.com. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday and join us again tomorrow. I'm Caitlin White. Stay home, stay healthy.